Hi guys, Scott and Phil here for another episode of the Wealth Lab podcast. Phil, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. How are you?
I'm well. Today we're going to be talking about navigating self-managed super funds. So you expect to hear the nuances on how to set one up, why some people do it, why they're not always a great idea, as well as some more finer details, especially when it comes to property, as well as other assets. So Phil, let's get into it.
Over to you. Let's do it. I suppose the first point to just tick off is what is a self-managed super fund? Which very, very simply, it does what it says on the box. So, you know, your alternative solution might be, you know, your industry fund that you're in, your rest, your Australian super, whatever, or you might be in a retail fund. And in that, you've got trustees and an investment committee that are making decisions on what's happening with your money. The difference to a self-managed super fund, you become the trustee, you become in control. It's up to you to manage your money. So that very simply is what a self-managed super fund is. I suppose that's probably the main point. So there's a few things that you need to consider in how they're set up. They're obviously a bit more complex to what you're doing just with plonking your money in the industry fund and forgetting about it. So typically when we're setting these up, a self-managed super fund is a trust. And then you need to have a trustee for that trust. So, a typical structure that you might see would be the self-managed super fund, which is the trust, and then a company, which is the trustee for the trust. Could I say trust any more times in a sentence, do you reckon?
There's a lot of structures involved. The way that I like to tell people is when it comes to, say, for example, setting up a self-managed super fund and buying property, it's two trusts, a super fund and a bare trust. All the documentation is combined. That's what you're doing. Two trusts, a self-managed super fund and a bare trust.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to put it. And it's probably worth noting as well that when you're considering the structure and how you set things up, you do have the choice of having a company as the trustee of your super fund, or you and, you know, maybe your spouse as individuals as trustee. And there's some nuance to how you would make that decision and the things you would consider. Typically, we would be talking to people around using a corporate trustee. Because of some of the things, if you're an individual, so anything that's owned by that super fund, so if your super fund goes and buys a property, that property is now owned in the name of the trustee as trustee for the super fund. So if Scott and I went and set up the Scott and Phil super fund, and Scott and Phil are individual trustees of that super fund, and then Scott drops off the perch, sorry, Scott, Phil's now the individual, the only trustee on that super fund, which is not allowed. We need to have at least two trustees. Now, if I go and find another trustee and bring them onto my super fund, I've got a problem because my house is now owned in the wrong trustee name. So I've got to restructure everything. And that applies to every asset, every individual share you own, managed fund you own, administrative nightmare. Another consideration may be I bought a property and a tradie comes to my property, trips over and smacks his face on something. If I'm an individual trustee, who do you think they're coming after for compensation? It's not my super fund. I'm not allowed to touch that. It's me. If I've got a company, my company's got no assets. All it does is hold my super fund. So, you know, go your hardest. Enjoy it.
So I'll just clarify that one. But this structure really protects the individual person who's creating the fund from liabilities, as well as the banks coming after them if they do default. Hopefully that never happens, but that is another benefit of having the bare trust and the trust structure. It does just create a layer between yourself and your asset whilst you are the beneficial owner of that asset. Should there be complications, there's a pretty high level of protection. And that's why there's a fair bit of documentation involved to set them up, because you are protected if anything goes wrong. That's why we do it that way.
Yeah. And look, there are some low touch SMSF providers out there that will help you set them up and that sort of thing. They're doing pretty cheap and they'll often direct you towards an individual trustee because it allows them to keep their pricing as low as possible. You get what you pay for. And, you know, I don't want you as a client if you've got 50 different shares and you've got to change trustees. That's a nightmare. Corporate trustee, happy days, away we go. And it costs you nothing to set the company up. It's a special purpose company. It costs you $60 a year. It's not worth quibbling over dimes to create a headache for yourself later. So anyway, probably waffled on too much now about the initial setup or what it looks like. So I'll hand over to you, Scott.
Over to me. Okay, so a self-managed super fund is like a superhero cape for your retirement savings. It gives you the power to control your destiny and make your money work harder so you so that you can do more. But it comes with the potential for risk. It comes with a high level of compliance. And it's really important that, look, if you do choose to do the superhero route, it comes with a lot more admin. Some people set and forget Aussie Supers, ARTs, Host Plus, whatever. These funds are fine. We've got no issue with those funds. We do sometimes recommend them for clients. If you've elected to take more control, add a certain type of asset class to the mix, those funds are not suitable for you to do it. So this is where it comes from. Just a little bit of background, the concept of sovereign super funds was kicked around in the 1980s, but really wasn't popularized until 1993, when the Australian government responded to calls by the industry and created the Superannuation Industry Act of 1993, allowing individuals, that's people like you and I, to set up their own super funds. Today, there's over 600,000 funds with close to $1 trillion of assets in them. So if you think of our population, there's about 13 million working Australians. There's about 26 million total, 600,000 self-managed super funds. They're still in the minority. But without fail, there is always an article in an AFR or something like that saying one or the other. Number one is self-managed super fund explosion, most popular thing, blah, 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 blah. And then in the next week, self-managed super funds no longer required. Blah, 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 blah. And it seems like it's a real lightning rod. At its core, there's really not that many self-managed super funds compared to the population. But the difference is they probably hold a much larger share of wealth, because if you're doing if you're putting the work to create a fund, you've probably already got a balance that you want to protect. I think that's probably the point that people refer to a lot more, which is they do tend to hold a higher level of asset. Certainly another point, which I think was touched upon post Royal Commission, there was a question for small balance funds, which has since been removed. But say, for example, if you've got under $150,000 of super, the costs are certainly something to consider. And it's a fixed cost that you do wear once to set a fund up. The higher the balance, the fixed cost is still the same. So there's not a percent, it's just a fixed cost. If you have funds under, say, 150, you really need to be very, very confident in whatever asset class you're setting up. And if you've got funds under 100 grand, you really shouldn't be probably doing it. We are aware that the ATO is the Australian Tax Office, which is the supervisory body that looks after the funds, has been very worried about people setting up these funds to buy crypto, because a self-managed super fund is exactly as it sounds, it's self-managed. You are the master of your own destiny. You can put really any asset you choose into it.
Yeah.
You can do benefit, books.
It's also a huge risk.
You can do rare books, you can do music, you can do crypto, you can do a very, very wide range of stuff can be put into it, and almost all of that stuff is usually a bad idea. So that's, I think, certainly the lower level of balance. Also, if this is something that's been presented to you as a simple, easy to consider option, that's not the case. There is admin, there is costs. You need to work with a professional team to make sure it's actually happening for you. So that's my little intro, or maybe even almost like a bit of a rant.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like, most people will come looking for a self-managed super fund because they want more control over the assets they invest in. But, you know, you've got to be super careful. The guardrails are removed, right? You're the master of your own destiny, as Scott said. So you don't have those guardrails of having an investment professional unless you've engaged someone and you listen to them, like you would with your traditional funds. So that's, you know, it's a benefit, but it's equally, it can be a really big risk because there's nothing to stop you from doing something really stupid. So be mindful of it. And be mindful of the admin burden. You know, like, I've got one, and every year at tax time, I hate my life. It's just part of it, but you got to be prepared for the
work. I mean, it's not that bad. I mean, I've got we both have one. So, you know, Phil and I both have personal super funds. I like the idea that you can add up to 5 members of a fund, which I think works really well for me. So from a cost perspective, yes, you've got one fixed cost, but if you can add up to 5 members at a future date, also the funds are around for as long as you need it to be. So it's something that can also pass on to future family members or spouses or siblings or friends and family. It's something that does hang around for a very long time. Yeah. I've also got the increases to the superannuation guarantee rate in front of me. So the 2023-2024, 11% of everyone's wages is going into super, which is a bonkers concept if you think about, like I said before, like there's 12 and a half million Australians.
Yeah.
11% is getting shoved into the stock market. Wild. That's going to go up to 11.5, and then 2025, 2026, it's going to be 12%.
A lot of money.
So that's really inflationary. So that means there's going to be a lot of money chasing a lot of assets. This is probably a great example on industry funds are not going to get smaller, and they're going to get a lot more vocal, and they're going to be a lot better advertising than someone who just does it yourself. So if that is something that worries you and you want to have that control, a supplementary super fund can be right for you.
Yeah.
If you're happy just to ride the wave, industry funds are fine. Or if you sit in the middle, work with an advisor, we use a lot of wrap accounts that straddle both. What were we going to say, Phil?
Yeah, exactly that, actually. You just hit the point. So sort of, you know, we've talked a bit about what they are and setups and all that sort of gear, but I suppose the next question is, why would you do it? And for a lot of people, you know, the answer really is you probably wouldn't. You know, wrap products have become really good. We can access a retail super fund and invest in a hell of a lot of stuff that, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago you couldn't. So there's a lot that you can do now with a traditional super fund that you couldn't in the past, which has removed the need for some people for a self-managed super fund. Probably the most common, I'd say, that you see people seeking one out is to be able to purchase a property, which may be a residential property, it may be a commercial property. There's a lot of nuance to those. Very simply, one question I get asked a lot is, can I buy a house with my super and live in it? The answer is no, except in very, 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 very limited circumstances.
Don't just say no. Absolutely okay, not. Don't even think about it.
No. Yeah. So, you know, it is an investment. Not only can you not live in it, you can't rent it to anyone that you're related to either. So there's no loopholes there. It's just flat out. It's got to be an arm's length investment. Like anything else, that's probably just. I want to get that one out of the way because I get asked.
So there's a concept of the sole purpose test. The sole purpose test was following that 93 legislation, which is a super fund. The money inside it, sole purpose is to provide you money when you retire, not today. You cannot get a current benefit of the super fund.
Yep.
It has to be in the future. Now, there's lots of ways people try and get current benefits from their balances, not allowed to. Those are the rules. If you do, you'll become a non-compliant fund and there's a lot of issues. So the legislative requirements are the fund is established for the purpose of providing retirement benefits of its members.
Mm-mm.
The fund's rules and governing documents do not permit the fund to do any other purpose than providing retirement benefits of its members. So old examples, but they're a goodie. The accountant who sets up a supplementary super fund buys an artwork and then puts the artwork on their wall in the office. Not allowed because you're getting a current benefit of that artwork. Classic cars, purchasing a classic car, looking at it, saying how pretty it is. Not really allowed. You've also got a 5% test for collectibles.
And you sure as hell ain't driving it anyway.
Correct. So there's a few questions around, for example, what happens if a property, you know, purchase a property in a super fund and then it gets, say, for example, a cyclone comes in, you need to build it back up to its present state. There's also an issue around capital developments as well, which you do need to be mindful of. I know that was a big issue with the Queensland floods.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, so everything's got to be brought back to the same stand. You can't make capital improvements while there's debt owing. And even like, you know, me as an owner of a property, if I go in and do some work on that property, you know, theoretically, I've just made a contribution to my super fund. So really, I need to be engaging a professional at arm's length and paying commercial rates. And if I am that professional, if I'm an electrician and I own a property and I do electrical work, I need to bill myself from the fund at commercial rates. I need to be able to demonstrate those at commercial rates, or, you know, otherwise it's going to be treated as a contribution to the fund. So there's a lot of nuance to it that, you know, really you just need to keep in your mind. It's an arm's length investment. I'll buy it and I've got to have my hands off and I've got to engage professionals for everything, really. So like you can't just go and buy something and renovate it yourself and away you go like you could with something outside.
Also, just I'm going to flag again, do not do not use it to buy crypto or whatever the future. Like, I mean, the current thing is AI. So I would say, you know, 2025 will be when there's AI investments popping up and there's people cold calling and there's freaking things on all the social media saying, you know, AI investments, whatever it is. Whatever the flavor of the month is when you're listening to this podcast, stick to the six the fundamentals, utilize professional advisors. Is anything that seems too good to be true is almost always that. Yeah, just be very mindful of what you're doing. But look, I don't want to leave a negative note, right? A sovereign super fund's great. We both have them. Okay. So it just requires some organization and some confidence in your ability to understand what you're doing with the funds, work with an advisor, work with a professional team. And then it can be a relatively set and forget type structure.
Yeah, and there can be some great advantages, you know, like think about a property held to retirement. Everyone hates paying capital gains tax. You sell your property in retirement phase, maybe you don't have to pay it. There's all sorts of cool stuff that you can do, and there's a lot of benefits to it. But yeah, you just got to go in with your eyes open and be smart about what you do. Yeah, I could talk for the next 3 hours, but I probably should stop.
So final point is there's no tax on death benefits with a supplementary super fund. If a supplementary super fund passes away, the death benefit is paid to the beneficiary in a tax-free context. This is in contrast to retail superannuation funds where there may be some tax implications for death benefits. There's also some tax benefits around transition to retirement, allowing members to access the superannuation benefits at retirement stage. Also, if a member passes away and there's multiple generations a part of the fund, there is a tax-free inheritance option. It's also available around that.
That's some wild stuff you can do with insurance.
This is exactly right. So on the nuances, on the knife edge, some really good things. But again, don't do it yourself for that type of stuff. You really need to work with an advisor. And that's probably typically for higher balances as well. So hopefully once you're in your 60s, pushing towards retirement, you've got that nice balance, you've done the calculations, you know, here's what my spending is post-retirement, here's what my asset base looks like, here's what the income generation from the asset base will look like, and it's going to be able to support me through my retirement and later years. And there's also some nuances that we can assist around that, yeah, the tax planning strategies.
Yeah.
All right, that's all from me. Phil, wrap it up.
I suppose the wrap up is, look, that can be a great vehicle. You get a lot more control and a lot more flexibility, which can give you a lot of benefit if used the right way. But if used the wrong way, that can cause you a lot of pain. So I guess Scott's already hit a few times. Engage with a professional if you think this is something you're interested in. Come and have a chat to us. We'll tell you straight out if we don't think it's right, and we'll also help you if we do think it's right. So, you know, come and have a chat if this tweaks any interest. But, yeah, probably leave it there. Like I said, it's a complex area and we could probably talk all day and still not cover everything. So this is just supposed to be a bit of a high level snapshot. Come and talk to us if it's something you're interested in and we can get more in depth into your situation.